Public Space Travel is a leftist, anti-capitalist podcast of disgruntled academics, video gamers, and friends. Our belief is that knowledge should be made more accessible and be used for anti-oppression and non-hierarchical revolutionary ends. You can support what we do at patreon.com/publicspacetravel and reach out to us at publicspacetravel@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 208-502-1406. Now, on to the show.
All right, everybody, welcome to Public Space Travel, your number one destination for Doomer news. Today is Sunday, July 26th, 2020. We're going to do a recap of the week, obviously, as we do. Apologies for advance. My brain is a little bit sleepy this morning because I was up very late last night watching the live stream of the Portland protests, which was crazy. It's wild. It's really wild to actually see this. I just want to say real quick, it's really wild to watch it because, I mean, I've seen the videos, I've watched some of the live streams, but last night specifically felt like something different. The fact that they were using leaf blowers and like a coordinated effort to push back the tear gas, the banging of the drums, it felt like a strangely coordinated, but it's not like, it's just like people just showing up of their own will in response to this attack, this continuous attack on our Constitution. Just like seeing just random people just come together and then decide collectively to perform these actions. I mean, like, as soon as the tear gas was deployed, the protesters made way for the leaf blower troops to come in and push the tear gas back. And it was frankly just amazing to watch.
That sounds like a nice coordinated effort to allow themselves to keep protesting with all the...
They are heroes.
They are, you know, they're braver than the troops.
I think absolutely. So. I felt like I was watching like actual real life heroes. I was like, yes, get in there, get that touchdown. It did sort of feel like it was like a sports thing. Like the way I was watching it, I was up on my feet. I was standing, my arms crossed, watching all of this go down. Like, I was invested monetarily in a Packers game. It was strange on all fronts, like what was happening there, what was happening in my own mind. I'm not usually like this, but anyway, so the first thing today, and the most pertinent thing, so the Portland protests, there was like 10,000 people reportedly Portland on the 24th of this week. This was in response to the feds illegally detaining people off the street without really any provocation, without reading them the rights, without giving them any indication as to why they were being detained, letting people go, very Gestapo-like, as we kind of talked about already. But yeah, people showed up. People were not having that in Portland. There was a wall of moms, which I think is still there. The wall of moms also had there's a video clip of them singing "Hands Up, Please Don't Shoot," in a very lullaby-ish kind of tone that was very creepy to watch. It was like "Hands Up, Please Don't Shoot." It was just, if I was a Fed agent, I would quit right then. Like, that's not, I'm not messing with that. But
is that how we can, is that the best counter police tactic, is just creepiness?
It's not the best, but yeah. It's like interesting to watch all these creative ways, I think, that people are choosing to protest, because they're not I don't know, it's weird because they're very, very keen on being nonviolent, but it's very it's very strange to see it, because the state in which, or the police, or the powers that be that are being protested against are very keen on violence, and they're willing to use violence on the nonviolent protesters. And so the nonviolent protesters have to come up with these creative memes, I guess, to respond. Everything outside of deliberately attacking, I don't know, it's like, it's wild to watch, because you're just watching someone who knows. You ever like see somebody in an argument and you just look in their face and you're like, oh, that person really wants to punch that person, and mm-hmm. you're watching it on both sides, but nothing is happening. So there's like a almost like a romantic tension in a way. Like, I'm actually a bit reminded of Community's episode in which Britta Perry is upset that her friends are being arrested in I don't know, Venezuela or something for protesting, and meanwhile she's at a community college and feels like she's not being real enough, so she decides to just protesting every little tiny thing that she can, no matter how small it is, just to get something out. And then there, meanwhile, there's the new security guard who just wants to just crack down on people so bad. Like, he wants to be a bad cop. That's his dream. And so there's like this weird romantic thing where they both fulfill each other's fantasies. I don't know. It's inappropriate for me to think that, but that's where my mind went. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I just can't help but think about the fact that it's like the way that the police and the feds respond to protesters feels like they've been waiting for this.
So you're saying that it's human nature? No, I'm just kidding.
It's natural. I don't know. Whatever. I'm going to get canceled. Earlier this week, the Portland mayor, Ted Wheeler, got gassed. He went out following the reports of the federal agents kidnapping people. He went out into the streets to get a look for himself. There's a lot of stuff that it's really hard to follow. All I know is that I don't feel sorry for Ted Wheeler getting gassed. What I think is important is the fact that a mayor did get gassed in a city by federal agents, when that said mayor, and I think the governor as well, it just explicitly said, we don't want that here. So this is mm-hmm. what it really highlights is the overstepping of the Constitution by the DHS and by Trump, that along with the veteran whose hands got shattered because he dared to walk up to the federal agents and ask them why they were violating their oath. It's just it's more examples of that same thing that people have been saying, which is that this administration in particular is very keen on destroying democracy. It's a larger picture of what we can maybe expect in the election, since Trump seems to have a very difficult time to just say that he will gracefully accept a defeat in the election. It's just one of those things where he says, well, we'll have to see. That's what he keeps saying. I'll have to see. I'll have to wait and see. I don't know how no one sees that and is like, oh, so he's just going to make an excuse. Like, he's getting ready to make an excuse about why he's allowed to stay in there even if he loses. I mean, he's like saying that, I'm getting off track here, but he's like saying that, he's already saying that the mail-in voting is a sham or...
I think what he says is that it's too easy to falsify results that way, which is like... No, I mean, we've been doing mail-in ballots for a while. And this is not only just on the Republican side, this is even the Democratic side, as we saw with the primaries this last, it feels like a decade ago, but it's only a few months, of, you know, voter suppression through, and a lot of it, and most, if not all of that, of those instances of voter suppression through the denying of poll places or denying of, like, with, and this is, I think, more on the conservative Republican side of, like, voter ID laws and stuff like that. It's mostly to, you know, kind of a theme of what we talk about on a lot of our episodes.
Yeah.
Is, you know, white supremacy. It's about silencing and disallowing people of color and that, yeah, it's about, like, maintaining white supremacy ideology and policy and stuff like that. It's all just to maintain power, essentially.
Right. Again, this is why I have no sympathies for federal agents being faced with a giant crowd of just civilians yelling at them, calling the names, throwing water bottles at them, throwing fireworks at them, because fuck them, you know, like, they deserve every elected member, anybody who is in a position where they have to, you know, like, make some type of rules or do some type of enforcement in some way or another, they should be held to a higher standard than anyone else, almost, especially because of that role. Like, I mean, fundamentally, I just don't like anyone in any of my shit. But if we agree as a society that we need some members to be that role, then we need to also have a way to keep those people in check, because they'll come after anyone. At some point, if you let them just do whatever, then they will do whatever, because there will be people who will subvert that. And I feel like, even this is for myself too, but I feel like people should be a lot more comfortable with belittling Congress members and elected officials and authority figures, because they should have a stronger backbone. Honestly, they should have a thicker skin, and they should be trained, and they should expect that they will get shit on if they behave poorly. And they should accept it with dignity. They should say, either I will accept this shit on my head, and hopefully you will let me come back to work, or I will take this shit on my head and I will leave my job, or whatever. But, I mean, either way, they're going to get shit on their head, and they have to accept that. That just has to be the rule of law over the law. I mean, who watches the Watchmen? Who shits on the Watchmen? I'm getting way off track here.
You're good. That's actually, that reminds me of, like, sort of contradiction between, it might be sort of stereotypical, but, like, a little maybe more identifiable of the sort of new, like, American libertarianism, but definitely on the conservative side as well, of, like, constitution thumping. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to take, like, Bible thumping, and then of, like, oh, it's like this holy document of the government is going to help us maintain our freedom and liberties, blah blah blah. But
yeah,
when, as we're seeing now, like, when those in power, even though they are elected, but then you look at, like, how elections work, and we just talked about voter suppression and all that, it's like, okay, well, when they're flexing their power to maintain control, essentially, it's those same people who are, like, all about the Constitution suddenly on their side of, on the side of the oppressors, because they aren't, or at least they're being told, at the very least, that they aren't being oppressed, even though you can go into, you know,
right,
the capitalist economic system is oppressing everyone. You know, just more so people of color.
For now.
Well, I mean, yeah. It's, yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's like the, that was the other thing, actually, that that was coming to my mind watching all these protests and watching everything going down this week I'm not like a, what is the word, constitutionalist?
Sure.
Because, like you're saying, like, like, oh, we think that, oh, we have a constitution, therefore we don't have to, like, yeah. I don't know. It's like, at the constitution, you read it, oh, you went against it, therefore you're going to jail. But that doesn't ever happen because there's different laws for different class groups.
Well, it's like, yeah. It's like, oh, it has all these checks and balances, but when you have a handful, because the whole thing is like checks and balances, you have, you know, the Congress can check the president and all that, but like when they all have the same ideology behind them, or they all subscribe to the same ideology, like they won't check each other is the issue. So like the whole constitutional mechanism kind of doesn't work.
Yeah, it only works if there are people there to enforce it.
Yeah, then when people try to you know, say, hey, you're not checking each other like you're supposed to, so we're gonna check you, then they come back with fucking,
you're a terrorist,
and
you're a
and as we'll get into private military contractors.
Oh yes. Do you want to just get into that right now? Seems like a oh no, wait, sorry, let me back up real fast. So what I was heading towards before my ADHD kicked in was that
it's the beauty of editing.
What people have been trying to say, and what is becoming more obvious, is that you can't fight racism without fighting the system. Mm-hmm. You can't fight white supremacy without eventually fighting capitalism. Mm-hmm. Because at its core, capitalism has benefited very well from exploiting marginalized groups and poor people. And it's done that most effectively through slavery. And since the slavery was made illegal, technically, they just found loopholes, legal loopholes, to sort of just keep on doing slavery, or just in general, just screw over lower classes. So even, you know, poor white Americans have more in common with black people than conservatorship would have them realize, making them believe that black people are less than, and therefore we have, you know, the whole racism stuff. But as more and more people, you know, fight back against racism, they're being met more and more with violence from the state, because the state is hand in hand with racism and white supremacy. And, you know, the wall of moms on the wall of vets thing kind of reminds me of the idea of even if you sort of disagree ideologically, or maybe even like if you disagree with the method by which people are protesting at this moment or in certain different moments, at some point you realize, and this is what some vets have illustrated, and I'm particularly like harping on the vets because I feel like that's sort of, I don't know why, it's like I respect vets more than police. I respect vets more than a lot of government officials in a lot of ways, because they have, I feel like they have more in common with me than other people, because they usually grow up in poorer neighborhoods. And I'm getting distracted again. The point I'm just trying to make is that this has been, and this continue to be, an issue that is so much larger than George Floyd. Even this issue of Ted Wheeler getting gas or whatever, like this is a situation in which every single citizen of this country and probably the world has a stake in fighting back this system. And I think that's what we're starting to see now. I feel like before it was like everyone was like, yes, of course we don't want to be racist. And I think now this is like an evolution of that, of, oh shit, like I didn't realize how far this went. Mm-hmm. Like this goes to the top. Like I think that's what people are starting to get to, is they're like, you know, like that the South Park episode where like inevitably things get crazy and there's someone who pops out of the shadows and goes, you just had to keep asking questions. And it's, I don't know. Those are my thoughts on that. Next thing.
Real fast before we move on. I just wanted to mention, I think what I'm thinking of specifically is, I think it was in New York, probably New York City. There was a congressman, I believe, who was also who also experienced tear gas as he joined protesting, and then I don't know. That just brought it just came to mind because of the mayor. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, it's like tear gassing is like a badge of honor. Well, I'm kind of joking, but it reminds me there was an article by the It's Going Down that sort of shared that sentiment. Like, they were in the article, the guy was writing, I should find it. Give me 1 second.
Okay.
July 21st, Portland Awakens, a report from the front lines by an anonymous contributor. Okay, so there wasn't. That's why I didn't remember who it was, because they were anonymous. But in this article, what they write about is the idea of, or not the idea, the experiences of being gassed repeatedly and realizing, almost being trained, how to not withstand, but tolerate tear gas. So like protesters are now realizing, okay, yeah, it sucks for like 10 minutes or 15 minutes. But with the right, care, you can just jump right back in. Like, you don't have to run away completely. And that's what they're talking about. And it's like this idea of being trained. I don't know. It's like a weird mental strength. There's incredible mental strength from all of these people. But the idea of taking what your oppressor is doing to you and finding a way to turn that back into a source of strength and make that become almost like okay, fine, tear gas me. I wish you would. And then they do it and they go, I'm still here. Now, what are you going to do? And now there's more of us. I can't get enough of that. I love that. And again, I think all these people are heroes. They're like actual heroes to me. Let's see. So what else going on? Oh yeah, prior to this weekend, Oregon did lose their request for injunction against the federal agents in Portland. This was on Friday. So Friday, the federal judge on Friday denied a temporary injunction sought by Oregon's top law enforcement officer, handing the Trump administration a victory in a legal battle over its deployment of federal agents to Portland. So if the powers that be aren't going to listen, then the people will have to speak for themselves. So that's what immediately happened. And will keep happening. The protests will continue until justice is improved, basically. alongside that, there was this article on Medium titled Mercenaries Target American Citizens in Cities Around the Nation by A.T. Murray. Murray?
I found this morning before we started. God, I am so unorganized.
Isn't the whole left? Isn't that the problem with the left?
True. Oh no, I'm failing everyone. It's from this Medium article. It says supplementing the Department of Homeland Security's or security paramilitary forces targeting peaceful protesters around the country are private security personnel contracted to DHS by Constellis, the mercenary company once known as Blackwater, who back in the Iraq War of the early aughts, they did a lot of the U.S. government's
dirty work. They're bad dudes.
But they got in a lot of shit for stuff that they did in Iraq. I can't off the top of my head think of stuff. I do recommend the podcast Blowback, which is all about the Iraq War and a lot of some of the history leading up to it, and then a lot of the bullshit that the U.S. got up to within it. Blackwater got a lot of shit because of that, and because of that, they actually changed their name several times, it looks like. A big thing to note here as well is that Blackwater was formed by Eric Prince.
Former Navy SEAL Eric Prince.
Yeah, but he is the brother of current Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. So there's a lot of, family wheeling and dealing within the administration.
That's which super is, great.
You know, because... not hasn't has totally not, and this is obviously sarcastic, totally not been an issue before with the Trump administration.
Yeah, yes. Also not an issue historically, and yeah. Not at all a reason for why that's supposed to not be allowed in our government, but you know, words, what do they really mean?
But this is huge to in my mind, at least, because I don't remember if Lazarus was on. He'd be able to, he's good at pulling names, so I don't remember exactly who it was, but this is basically, there's a definition of fascism. Fascism is when empire turns imperialism back on its own people, basically. And, you know, if the DHS is hiring, not only hiring private contractors, private military contractors to police, you know, their own citizens, but not only that, like on top of that, it's although under a different name, because, you know, that's all that really matters when you're trying to maintain or you know, not maintain, as it were, visibility on yourself. But yeah, it's the same fucking, it's the same fucking company.
It's the same people.
It's not the same company, quote unquote, but it's the same people who owned that company are being hired to essentially do what they did in Iraq, in foreign territory, bringing it back home, doing it towards.
They've adjusted their branding strategies, but not their product line.
Yeah. But so, like, for now, they're detaining, I guess. But like, at what point? At some point, it's like, if it's the same company or the same people who ran that company now running a technically different company, blah, blah, blah. Like, when does it, like, they did fucking human rights bullshit abuses in Iraq. Then it was, you know, quote unquote, all good because it's not here and it's for freedom, you're spreading freedom and democracy around the world or whatever. But now it's like maintaining freedom and democracy in the United States. Like, how to me, it's just a slippery slope. Of like, or a potential slippery slope of like, they did that shit over there. The same people are giving a very similar operation, I guess, here. So like, at what point will it just be like, well, it worked so well over there? And that's kind of interesting. Also, it brings to mind of like a lot of the counterinsurgency work that and what they learned through Afghanistan and Iraq. So that's really fucking terrifying to me.
It's like
just bringing that home.
Yeah. I know. It's like when a person who is nonviolent gets sent to prison and then learns how to become a very efficiently violent. Except in this case, these people, these mercenaries, they want to do this. Like it's kind of hard to fathom because it's almost like they're not. I know I'm othering here, but like, they're not one of us. Like, they're not part of our system. They get off on this. That's why they join this group, because they want to be able to do whatever they want and get paid for. Like, they have a penchant for violence that they're particularly probably very good at, and they train every day and enacting acts of violence and criminality and human rights abuses, and they get paid to do that, and they're being hired by our government to attack us.
I think it's very similar to like what I mean, this is essentially all related to the same thing so far. Like, it's all the same protest essentially. But this, you know, this reminds me very much of like what a lot of, you know, I know it's not one unified police force, but what a lot of police have become. And what, how this protesting started is like I see a lot of similarities between like cliques in high school and
Yeah.
Just like a broader societal, kind of like how people, you know, you tend to be attracted to other people who are similar to you, have like similar ideologies and similar interests and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
with how I understand of like what was happening with police was, I mean, there's a few things, but like very much like a sort of microculture of their own, like, you know, they're, you're one of the family, it's the police family. And then there's also like, I forgot who the dude was, but there's some guy who was like going around training all the police about like, you gotta have killology. Yeah.
Something gross, man.
You have to like, yeah, you have to get rid of the completely separate the part of your brain that's like, don't kill people. You got to separate that out because they're everyone's the enemy. Like, it was essentially what came down
to.
Like,
there's like a video of like a training of his where he's like, if you're going to have a problem killing somebody, then you got to get a different job.
Right. So I think this is like very much probably a similar thing of like sort of amongst this mercenary company is like, it's going to be a similar kind of psychology there of like, you know, they're brothers in arms, like they're going to protect each other. They're going to work together and they are on the same team with one another. And then again, who is the enemy? It's everyone who's not your group, essentially.
Yeah. And if there are any members of any of those groups, like police or this group, that have any doubts about what they're doing, I'm sure it's also like a lobster in the bucket effect where if one gets close to getting out, the others will pull them back in or find some way to shame that person or ostracize them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was even some stuff that had come out with the, you know, George Floyd related protests of, you know, the good cops, basically the ones who ended up quitting the force because of this like group psychology or I don't know, maybe I shouldn't use psychology so much. I am not a psychologist.
This groupthink.
Yeah. Of like, or just like peer pressure, essentially, like one officer would be like, towards another officer's actions, like, hey, that was fucked up. Like, that's unethical and just morally wrong. And then instead of the pressure being put on the cop who did something wrong, the pressure is then put on the whistleblower, essentially.
Yeah. They get fired
or
demoted or whatever. Like, they get their wrists slapped because they're not part of the brotherhood. How dare you say that about your brother? That's your brother. It's so disgusting. It's so disgusting that so many other Americans. I hate that I can't go to the grocery store without thinking about how someone right next to me in line might support that institution. Like, I'm willing to make concessions as like, if we as a community say we should have somebody doing some type of policing. I would be like, okay, well, I mean, I guess I can make that concession, but like, they shouldn't be fucking judge, jury, executioner, and also like no overwatch of any kind like that. So fundamentally stupid, but again, it's like frustrating because then it's like logic and reason is not something that is valued in this society. Like, science and technology are seen as otherworldly gifts that we provide visas for foreigners to come build our things and then we kick them out. I'm speaking very hyperbolically right now, but people get it. Earth people are loving this.
You want to get into
this next thing? Coronavirus?
Glorious.
We did spend a lot of time with that.
This glorious new way of protecting yourself.
We did spend a lot of time on the Portland protest, but I think it's just super important. Like, all that stuff is just, it's going to be forever, and we're going to keep talking about it. So if you don't like it, you can fuck off. But in lighter news, the CDC says you can have sex with strangers, but one of the ways it recommends doing that safely in this time of pandemic is to use barriers like walls, or for example, glory holes that allow for sexual contact but prevent close face-to-face contact. In a video, a member from the CDC, whose name escapes me at the moment, Dr. Bonnie Henry, sort of has this vibe of, I'm not like a regular mom. I'm a cool mom. In fact, you know, glory holes. She doesn't say glory holes in the video, but I almost feel like not bad, but like I just feel for her. Like it's like a mom trying to have the sex talk with their kids. That's the vibe I get from this video. She's like, you know, we can all. It's perfectly safe now to not perfectly safe, but like I understand people want to do stuff. So like if you want to do stuff, like, you know, there's ways to do that safe. And it's just like this whole I don't know, it's kind of charming in a way, but they're not wrong. I mean, glory, they're not wrong that wouldn't work. It's just that they use the word glory holes, and the word glory holes is a sexual term that you can use. They look through Pornhub. And it's not far removed from any idea of romantic intercourse that you could imagine. I don't know how they expect people to just, I suppose, to just meet in bathrooms and cut out holes in the bathroom stalls. Like, I'm not going to put a hole in my house. Where is this supposed to happen?
I just wanted to clarify real fast. It said it's the British Columbia CDC. So this is in Canada, I believe.
Oh, right.
But so the writing in this article, so this is from Global News from Canada, I guess, by Josh K. Elliott. This is kind of like, I don't know how to describe. It's not like a guilty pleasure or something, but I don't know. I guess maybe it is just because it's like so on the nose, but not, I don't know. But okay, so just the word choice. Word choice is fun. So this is from the article, quote, "The recommendation is just a tip and not a firm rule."
I forgot about that part. Yeah, that was like, that's so tongue in cheek. I can't believe they like, that's still on the website. Like, that's their official stance. It's official stance.
It's not, there's nothing explicit. It's just.
Again, not technically wrong. I did put in here, I just wanted to just a little scientific background on how COVID-19 spreads at the moment, at least according to the BC CDC. The virus is spread by liquid droplets in saliva and respiratory fluids, such as breathing, when a person coughs, sneezes, and sometimes when a person talks or sings. Whether you are engaged in sexual activity or not, it can still be spread from two people who are within about 6 feet. If the droplets are inhaled or breathed in, and it has been found in semen and also feces, you know,
your kinks will not protect you.
Yeah, your kinks will not protect you. You
have to protect yourself.
You're still rolling the dice on this. Of course, their first recommendation when you go to the website is to self-express. is still their number one prescription. Moving on from that, we have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez clapping back at Representative Republican Tejo Ho in a fabulous video that I'm sure everybody's seen now, but it's so amazing. Like, so I got a few quotes here that I liked. The one that everyone knows, "I will not stay up late at night waiting for an apology from a man who has no remorse over calling women and abusing language towards women. I have to show my parents that I am their daughter and that they did not raise me to accept abuse from men." That one was amazing. I love that line so much. And this one in particular, because there's a strategy that I completely support and talking to and debating and combating conservative minded folk. What she says is, what Mr. Yoho did was give permission for other men to do that to his daughters. What Yoho did was he called AOC a fucking bitch on the Capitol grounds, and then he didn't apologize for it. What she expressed in her talk was, you know, she's used to this because obviously she used to work as a bartender and she lived in New York and she's a woman, so of course she's like used to this. I loved it. It's sad that this is a statement that rings true and everything, but the idea of, so, you know, we've been saying that, you know, trying to use logic on conservatives is just a frustrated endeavor all around because that's not what they're interested in. But if you can apply logic to how what they're saying directly negatively affects their families, I found that that's a really nice way to ruffle their feathers and get them to be caught off guard. I've seen this a number of times now where members, different elected officials and whatnot, in heated debates with Republicans or conservatives, they basically just use whatever logic they have to support, you know, like state abuse, police abuse, whatever sort of thing that Republicans talk about that they're totally like quote unquote fine with, because as long as they're still getting their needs met, if you turn it back around to them and say something like what AOC did, says what he did was give permission for other men to do that to his daughters, to his wife, I'm fairly certain that he was very upset about that. And that makes me very happy to think about, because it's true. And because it is true, it's absolutely true that it supports that, and it needs to be addressed all the time, because the thing that is happening with the white supremacy and the patriarchy and all these things is that they continue to exist because they don't have to think. There's nothing that forces them necessarily to have to think about what they're doing, because everything and the system supports their viewpoints and their ideologies. So they never are forced with how this affects them, you know? And then when you try to come up to them, you try to make pleads for, you know, human rights or whatever, they just laugh and look the other way. Sometimes they might agree, but usually they'll just call you like an SJW or something like that and find a way to diminish your cause. But if you could find a way to make your cause directly, you try to find a way to argue it in a way that you say, like, you know, you're screwing yourself over. I think it's a brilliant tactic because it forces them to be more idiotic in live, like in real time. Because again, they don't care about human rights. So trying to make points about people getting hurt doesn't matter. But if you say your daughter is affected, they're like, because the thing is, their whole thing is, I'm going to protect my family with my muscles and my guns and my military. I'm going to, if anything happens, I'm going to be the one to defend them against the communists. Like they're so hard. They're like ready to just go into battle and fight for their families. That's like the whole thing. It's like, I'm going to protect my family. And then if you're like, oh, you're actually fucking your family over right now, they're like, wait, but that doesn't make sense because I can't attack myself. What the fuck? Just, I don't know.
I could see that.
Those are my feelings. I don't know.
I could also see that going the other way, though, unfortunately. Of like,
what's the other way?
Like, what, my family, you can't shame me with my family. My family's just as racist as me. Like, if they all have a similar.
They double down. I mean, they can always do that.
And they'll defend each other. So.
Oh, yeah. That's true. But I guess the idea is, because I try to avoid having arguments with people who are fundamentally unhinged, because if people, you know, like I said before, like that whole saying of if you see two people arguing in the streets, It doesn't matter who's right or wrong. It just kind of looks like two idiots fighting from a bystander point of view. And what I prefer to do if I'm in that situation, which I haven't really been in a while, not since high school, thanks, Brad, for bullying me, is to make it so they're sort of like fighting with themselves and just let them sort of embarrass themselves. And it doesn't mean that it'll work, and it doesn't mean that they'll like realize what they did wrong. Mm-hmm. But it helps to get the public on your side. And I think that's far better, because what's most enjoyable to me when watching my enemies perish is to see how they whittle away. And
does that come up a lot?
More than you know.
Oh, no. All right.
No, but to see them just sort of emotionally and spiritually decline because they are have become ostracized from their own family members or maybe their own church group or something, so that their whole, you know, sense of self becomes in question. And I'm in favor of that because I feel like their part of their privilege is that they never have to figure out who they are. They just get to be, because they were probably raised in an environment that supported their worldviews from the get-go, and then they just kind of kept going because they already had the money to just do what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. That's the typical scenario. I know there's outliers, and there'll be people who will be like, but what about, and what about, I don't really care. I stand by what I say.
I'm going to put my hunty hat on. Beep.
Okay.
I think that's a good argument of like how education is really important, getting taught the right things, of like basically just like not getting other viewpoints, getting other people's lived experiences of you know, you can't necessarily, you can't actually be in someone else's shoes, you can only be in your own shoes, but you need to hear other people's experiences and take that into consideration, because, you know, I think some part of what you were saying is like, if you are made aware of your own privileges and the lack of the same privileges that other people have compared to you, like you can see that it's not just, you know, you need to get out of the state of mind of like, you are the center of your own universe, and take other people's experiences into consideration and have empathy, which seems to be rare somewhat in some extent.
I feel like,
I don't know, that's unfair. There's a lot of people with a lot of empathy, and I'm just being a doomer, so
again, logic and reason out the window. Fuck them.
Yep.
Okay, so we're at the end here, so just real quickly, just to kind of wrap this up, there was a short thing with the Pentagon. The House voted to cut the Pentagon. Oh no, the House was voting to cut the Pentagon budget by 10%, and it failed, 93-324. But this is the first time in decades that Congress has even considered a significant cut.
That's pretty big. It's like, so, it got blown out, but at least it's coming up.
Yeah, it's like, I was surprised to actually hear that was something that was being voted on. So I don't know. Progress? Progress? Question mark. In other fun news, I don't know if we need to conclude this now. It's been like an hour, but whatever. And fun news, political scientist and key contributor to quantum social science, Alexander Wendt, makes a case for taking UFOs seriously in a Vox article written by Sean Illing, I think is his name. It's fun. It's UFOs are fun. They're supposed to be fun. I think. I mean, this year alone, I forgot. Did you forget?
In your imagination, it's good until they show up.
Yeah. Until they show up. It's the Pentagon released 3 videos of UFOs recorded by the Navy. This was this year, 2020, it was part of the 2020 bingo card, UFOs, and it got overlooked because of the pandemic, and now continues to be overlooked because of fascism. But
I think it was last year. I don't know. Time. What is time anymore? I think it was last year when they were leaked. I think it was. I don't know.
Oh, really?
I think it was last year. Okay. I don't know if it's worth mentioning, but it's just some like somewhat fun thing of it's the I'd have to look it up, but the organization that Tom DeLonge of formerly of Blink 182 used to be or is part of. Anyway, not important. Continue.
I was thinking of Tom DeLonge. I was trying to remember his name actually. We'll look at that later. I'm too tired now to look into it.
My brain was also just like, ooh, I know something. I can add something.
But what I thought was kind of interesting from this article is that Alexander Wendt says on the taboo of studying UFOs, or aka conspiracy of silence, he says, in our academic paper in 2008, we argued that the modern state is what we call anthropocentric, which basically means that humans are sovereigns. In ancient times, it was the gods or nature that was thought to rule over everything. Now it's human beings. And this principle is embodied in the state. And if you call that into question, that the state is not the only potential sovereign here, the whole legitimacy of the state is called into question. So the whole worldview of the modern state is very vulnerable to the UFO question. And you can't even ask it because it would just blow the whole thing wide open. It's fun. It's fun because it's like 9/11 truther conspiracy fun, you know?
Yeah, I totally see that. I don't know if I was
like back when
I was there was a time where I, you know, considered sort of like what was that, like that Zeitgeist film?
Oh yeah,
kind of like
I think it's just called Zeitgeist.
Yeah, of the sort of trutherism type 9/11 stuff.
Yeah, pre QAnon.
Yeah,
it's like this reminds me of.
Looking back on it, there was definitely an aspect of a weird funness about it. not of the actual stuff in the theory itself, but like just I don't know, like, some sort of like social aspect of like.
It's fun to feel like you're keyed in on something.
I think I think that's a lot of what has to do with like even like the whole QAnon stuff. Yeah. Like that is just like being a part of
I know something others don't.
And being a part of it.
I'm part of an elite group of individuals.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a particular set of skills. It's that whole thing. It's like everyone wants to be their own superhero in their fucking movie, in their world, in their mind.
You just want some sort of agency over the world.
Yeah. And I get that. Yeah. But that's why I play video games like a normal person. But I guess that's a good place to end this episode. There's obviously more we could have talked about. And if you have any questions or ideas of ways that we can, I don't know, cover things better, talk about things better, have better vocabulary, maybe we should go back to school. I don't know. Reach out to us on Twitter. We are at Public Space Pod.
Yeah.
And if you want to...
We're the only two who aren't actually part of academia on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. So apologies for our layman terms. But also not, you know?
Yeah.
Our viewpoints matter too.
You think you're so smart because you get your...
With your fancy schools. You got your fancy paper. You got
your fancy lifelong debt that you're in now because you got it.
Yeah. Yeah, what did that ever do for you, huh, buddy, pal? Yeah, that's right. I'm living in the real world. You can't take away my pride. Okay, that's enough of this. So, anyway, reach out to us. Find us over on the socials that I mentioned, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
See ya.
Space travel.
Hi everyone, this is Lazarus Wolf. Just wanted to do a shout out to our patrons. Absolutely a genuine, massive thank you to our supporters who help us continue this podcast. So thank you, David, Noelia, and the Midnight Sloth for supporting us at the $5 solidarity level.
I like you, and if you can't handle it, you can just, you know, fuck off.
Please consider donating to your local bail or mutual aid fund or another charity for social justice. If also able, you can also support us at patreon.com/publicspacegrumble.
We have journalistic integrity here.
I mean, yeah, I guess. We shouldn't be inaccurate. But we are not journalists ourselves.
No, I'm just doing my best. I'm just... an uneducated fool with dad issues.
Aren't we all?
So July 21st. Oh, what?
I said, aren't we all?
Aren't we all? That's what's happening. What you're seeing now in the streets now is just people with repressed dad issues.